Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It's a Tuesday here on the... Nope.
Chaps and Kate Show.
Chaps and Kate Show. Yeah.
Period. Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday edition of Zero Blog 30, and today we have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, airmen in Okinawa are authorized to wear shorts on the flight line. Is this a big deal to anyone besides Kate? She's furious about it, and I'm not sure why.
This is unbelievable, but I'll hold off for now because I'm fuming.
Round number two, the Taliban, Afghan forces, and the United States have gone into a week-long reduction of violence agreement. We're going to check in on the first day just to see how it's going. It's almost like the first day of school. Round number three, speaking of the Taliban, what in the fuck are you doing, New York Times? The squad is going to get into a mind-bending decision that resulted in having a Taliban leader write an opinion piece for the New York Times. Round number four, one of the best parts on deployment is the deployment video. Everybody looks forward to it at the end, seeing each other, seeing what they've been up to, seeing all the little pictures of everybody looking so badass in all their gear. Choosing a song can be tough, though. We're going to rate a popular one today. It's called Mr. Red, White, and Blue. And finally, round number five, recently a 62-year-old veteran broke a planking record. He held the position for nearly 8 hours. We're going to have you guess what school he went to. It's going to make Connor happy. And Connor, despite what many of you say, also deserves to be happy. And all of that is going to be brought to you by our good friends at the Barstool Sports Store. Make sure you're going to pick up Zero Block 30 gear. We have a bunch of hoodies. We have a bunch of sweatshirts. We have a bunch of different stuff. After the weekend, and I have an announcement to make. This is an official announcement. It's not a take I've given anywhere before. But I want to let you guys know something. Because I've been married for almost 10 years now. Or over 10 years now. 10 and a half years now. And one of the things that we don't get to do as often as we would like to is go out on fancy date nights together because we have two children. They constantly have to have a babysitter or other things to worry about. So we don't get to go out just us two nearly enough. And when we do, we try to go to someplace fancy. Well, we had one of those opportunities this weekend, but it got me to have a take. I have a take.
Oh. What's the take?
I'm completely out on steakhouses. Out.
Why? Why?
I'm out on a... there because I think just like a traditional steakhouse is boring. It's just boring. Like going out and being like, oh, what do you want? Oh, I'll have a ribeye. Oh, I'll have a top sirloin. Make sure it's aged for 60 days. Get out of my face.
Boring.
It's so fucking boring.
Yeah.
It's boring.
I've been watching a lot of Chef's Table on Netflix. Mm. Give me some of that stuff. Give me a steak, but put it on a tiny Ferris wheel that rotates around in front of me. Get weird with it, you know? Make it exciting.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I don't enjoy a good steak because I am pescatarian now, so whenever I go out, I want to have a nice steak because I don't eat that at home.
Wait, time out. Is this going to be one of those things now where you try to work in every freaking day
that
to
you're
tell
pescatarian?
People that you're pescatarian?
Yeah.
It might be. It might
right. I just want to know.
Bitch, it might be.
Got
okay.
it.
It might be. So right. I go there, and I'm eating this. It's supposed to be the nicest restaurant in San Antonio, and they do steaks well in Texas. The steak is good, and I also had, like, lobster cream corn. I had potatoes, and I had carrots and asparagus. Like, the traditional steakhouse stuff, all the sides come separately, have nice wine. They had a wine list of, like, 1,500 different types of wine or something like that. So you get, like, a good wine. But after we left, like, you end up paying a shit ton of money for one of these spots. And then after we left, I was like, you know what? That wasn't even that enjoyable. Like, the conversation with my wife was great, but the food was good. But it's not something that I got home and I was like, I'm glad I had that steakhouse experience.
Well, technically, Applebee's is not a steakhouse, but I still am glad that you guys had a night out and that you got to hang out together. But
great to hear that Applebee's has stepped up its wine list, though.
Oh, yeah, it is. They've really
started to come into their
dollar wine night they have now. So that's exciting.
Yes.
But yeah, they need to jazz it up a little bit. I've been watching, like I said, that Netflix show. And now, given I eat Easy Mac 3 nights a week and then angel hair pasta 2 nights a week. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches this weekend. But you're right. Food needs to get a little more exciting when you're going out.
I don't know. I just think here's a take, and this is going to annoy pretty much the majority of the country. If you're any good, your restaurant would be in New York City. All right?
Oh.
So I think if you want a good steak, you got to do it and go to a good steakhouse next time you're up here in New York City, chaps. Because
I've gone to steakhouses in New York City.
Which ones have you gone to, though?
I went to Meats. I don't know. I've been to a bunch of them with Keith.
He went to Meats.
Places that were...
You never been to Meats?
The meat store.
Yeah. He went to Big Meats here in New York City. Anyways, you're right. It's a snooze fest. And I
disagree.
Speaking of Applebee's, let's get into round number one because Kate has a little bit of bottomless rage about this next topic. Now, before she really introduces it, I spent time in Okinawa. And I'm always surprised whenever I hear articles about this, about the airmen that are on the flight line, the Marines that are on the flight line in Okinawa, complaining about how hot it is, because it is pretty hot, but it's not, my memories of Okinawa is not, this is the hottest place I've ever been in my fucking life. I wish I would have wore shorts all the time. It wasn't like that at all. So when news comes out that the airmen there are getting special treatment, I was a little bit surprised. Tell us what's going on, Kate.
You were a little bit surprised. I was. Much like the ribs at Applebee's are endless, my rage knows no bounds. It continues forever with this story. I was extremely triggered by this. And you know what a stickler I am for rules and regulations.
Yeah,
so,
big
Kent
time.
Foster, Okinawa, airmen at Kadena Air Base now sport blue uniform shorts on the flight line to help them beat the suffocating Okinawa heat. The shorts were issued in January following the lead of stateside bases. Oh, my God. So it's already here in the States. Mm. Nellis Air Force Base, Luke Air Force Base, Tyndall. So Florida, Arizona, Nevada, they rolled out the shorts last summer. And the material is tough, flexible, and stain resistant, similar to clothing worn by civilians in the maintenance and construction fields and hillbillies all over Florida, Arizona, and Nevada. I'm always hot on the flight line, Crew Chief Airman.
Those Arizona hillbillies.
Yeah, those Arizona hillbillies, desert billies, whatever they are. I'm always hot out on the flight line, Crew Chief Airman First Class Richard Flagg said. Even at night, I'm hot outside, so these shorts are really nice for keeping cool. You know what's not cool?
What's not cool?
Looking like a dumb idiot in uniform. No offense. That was mean. I'm sure he's awesome and great at his job. But this is more of a meat thing, okay? Flagg said he expected the move to improve morale and productivity. If you feel bad, then you're probably not going to be as productive compared to if you're comfortable, he said. I know when I feel good, I want to work harder. Well, you know what?
What?
When I'm a Marine, I just work harder, okay? Mm. I don't need shorts
or
anything else to make me work harder. I'm just doing it. Anyways, Okinawa temperatures were between 61 and 79 degrees Fahrenheit in the month of January. That requires shorts?
That seems pretty nice.
Summer months, it gets to 90 degrees with 95% humidity. Uniform change was a result.
I guess that's pretty bad, but it gets hotter in Nevada and Arizona. I get it, Nevada and Arizona, but 90 with 95% humidity, that's a little uncomfortable, but not unbearable.
Well, the uniform change was a result of feedback that leaders received from maintenance airmen. We started noticing maintenance organizations in hot weather environments across the Air Force allowing airmen the option to wear shorts. Mother of God. Anyway, commanders were fully on board with this. The shorts may be worn on the flight line and in the flight line dining facility. It just keeps getting worse. Airmen are required to change before leaving those areas. I mean, where do I begin?
Is this the flight line or the country club?
A lot of wacky stuff happening on the flight line. I know that goofy electric string comes out to stop the planes on the boats. What if that hits you right in the ankle? Okay. What if there's bees? What if there's a plane you haven't worked on in a while, you tinker with the thing, bees come out, they're going right up your shorts, and then you're out of work for 5 months probably. Yeah. None of these planes are getting fixed, accidents start happening. Mm-hmm. I have never. Ladies got to start shaving their legs? No. Is the word, I don't understand this. I'm picturing cargo shorts, and everybody knows on dating apps, if you're wearing cargo shorts, sorry, honey, you're out. So why do we want that look for our men and women in uniform? Next, they're going to start being able to wear dad socks and sandals. They can show
they
up
already
on the flight
are.
Line.
Like, if you look at the picture that there, and just so everybody knows, I had Kate act like she was mad about it. I don't think if there's anything that Kate can care less about than somebody
I'm
wearing shorts.
I'm secretly delighted that they can.
Now they can be happy.
I would love to wear shorts on the flight line.
Oh, yay. Just to see how bad Kate could be about it, and it wasn't that mad. It was honestly a little disappointing.
I tried so hard to be mad about it.
You had like a smile on your face as you were being mad.
All I could picture was their little shorts out in the flight line. I love it.
They're looking so cute in their shorts. It's great.
I wish that they could do Lieutenant Dangle short shorts on the bus. Just
see, that
would
look better. I think that has a little bit of military tradition, like the old ones that like the Navy chiefs wear whenever you're doing swim qual. I think that those look good, like whenever you're out there. But going on the flight line, it does seem like it would be a safety issue, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what you constantly get told as a junior troop about so many of the uniform items. Like, for example, whenever you're out in the desert, whenever you're in Fallujah or whenever you're in Iraq or you're Afghanistan, you roll your sleeves down. You have as much protection from your cami utility uniform as possible for protection. This seems like they're going the other way there, right?
Again, this is like when we visited the Air Force Academy and I was like, wow, they let them have like a lot of autonomy over their own, like a lot of their own choices, like personal whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is like, again, another reason I love the Air Force. They're just like, fuck it. You guys are toasty. This actually makes sense. Wear shorts. Like, holy shit.
It does make sense. And that's what really pisses me off.
Right.
Is that sometimes the Air Force does things on a common sense basis. Like, they're really hot. Shorts probably isn't going to affect their safety that much. Let's let them wear shorts.
And
me, I'm like, you motherfucking pussies. How dare you?
Yeah.
Chaps is like, you're bringing down the entire integrity of the Air Force by allowing them to wear shorts.
Yeah, we might as well call the president, fold up shop on Guantanamo right now.
I feel like because it was feedback they were getting from the fleet, from people on the flight line, so they must have sent out like a survey or something like that. I feel like in the Marines, if like 40 people had been like, we need shorts, it's too hot, they would have been like, good, here's your new wool pants, bitch. Yeah. Like, I feel like they would have just made
good.
It worse.
Good, get an office now. Get
oh, good.
Fucking service office.
I think this is just part of like being, you know, working on the flight line. You just got to suffer through wearing pants. Well, and I think a little complaining shouldn't have changed that.
Well, no, the Brits, remember how cool they looked? I'd see them on Leatherneck on there, the British side of the base, and they would be like in their shorts, and the Australians too, and they're like, why are you guys always wearing pants? I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. It's pretty hot out, man.
Was that
like,
a cross
or whenever it's
Australia.
Hot as shit, or when it's hot as shit, and they make you roll your sleeves tight as hell so no air can get through.
Yeah.
You have no circulation at all. Like, that doesn't make any sense either. The things that we do with uniforms to make it more like where you can't do your job as well. So this makes sense. It's surprising to me that I'm on this side. I'm on the side of wearing shorts. There were some people that whenever they were at Marine Corps Base Hawaii, that some of the MPs there were allowed to wear polos and shorts too.
Whoa.
And whenever I went there, I was like, what in the fuck is this?
Now that's a bridge too far.
Unreal. Now, is this starting to open your eyes a little bit to the umbrella?
Absolutely not. Before we get into that, let's move on to round two. All right, round number two, we're going to head on out to Afghanistan because Reuters has reported that Taliban fighters and Afghan security forces clashed in parts of Afghanistan on Saturday, just the day after they were supposed to have a week-long reduction in violence. It was announced, and now they're already fighting again. Were you guys surprised to find out that, one, the Taliban and Afghan forces in the United States had agreed to a week-long drawdown? And they're saying that it's not supposed to be a ceasefire completely, but just a reduction in violence. Were you guys surprised that this was an agreement?
No, because I feel like we keep making these agreements, and then the Taliban keeps doing shit. I feel like this is a repetitive thing. So
it definitely is, and it definitely is, because the United States even kind of, like, we recognize that already. They said if the violence reduction period is observed successfully, the United States and the Taliban will sign an agreement, which should be more permanent, on February 29th, that could lead to a pullout of thousands of U.S. troops after nearly two decades in the country. Taliban fighters attacked Afghan forces in the Balkh province in early hours of Saturday morning, according to a spokesman for the police there. The attack was confirmed by the Taliban spokesman in an audio message to Reuters, and he said that the Afghan forces convoy tried to enter a territory controlled by the group. The Taliban spokesman also confirmed similar clashes in other parts of the country, adding that the violence reduction understanding covered specific actions in areas, and all incidents of firing should not be considered a violation of the understanding, which he stressed was not a ceasefire.
So
not only was there one incident, but there were several incidents of still violence going on across Afghanistan.
And the article even says that the incidents did not spark immediate alarm on either side, because it's just like, fuck it, we know they're going to go back on their promises. We know it's not like none of this probably really matters.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the Taliban is straight up saying, wherever there's a loophole, for violence. We're going to find it. So we'll still be within the agreement or whatever, but we're still going to also be violent because there's these loopholes. They were out of this territory. They were doing this. They were doing that. So we were in our rights to do such a thing. So
I have
it
a message.
Really reminds me. Go ahead, Cons.
I was just going to say, just in general for this story, I have a message for Reuters, for any major news publication in the United States, around the world, as it pertains to what's going on in Afghanistan. I had a coach, he used to say, don't tell me about the pain, just show me the baby. I'm tired of you guys even reporting on this. Listen, don't report on it until it's done. Until we're out of there, until we're pulled out, I don't even want to see these stories anymore. Because I'm getting aggravated. Every few months we see a story like, hey, we're going to work on it, da-da-da-da-da. And then nothing happens. Nothing changes. I'm tired of hearing those stories. I'm tired of reading this stuff.
I feel like the reporting on it's the only reason we're pushing for an end and a change and all
this
stuff.
No, but I don't think it's productive at all to report on it when if it continues to just backtrack. Don't even report on it anymore.
Wild
just go get
take.
It done.
Absolutely
just go get it done.
Wild take.
Whatever. Don't tell me about the pain. Just show me the baby.
Okay.
That is a wild take for both parenting purposes and for war reporting.
Yes.
It's an outlandish take on both sides. It does, however, remind me that the U.S. is kind of like a parent in this, where you're saying, look, if you guys can get along for 5 days, we'll go to Disney World. That's it. 5 days. You
just
don't fight heavily. I'm not saying that you have to be perfect. You don't have to be a bunch of little baby Jesuses running around. But you just have to get along better than you get on now, and we'll go to Disney World. And Afghan and Taliban forces are like, we cannot do it. We cannot last a couple of days. So what makes us possibly think that this is ever going to get anywhere? Cons is right. We have had these type of agreements going along different times. But eventually you just got to say, fuck it, let's just leave. There's never going to be a point where the Taliban and the Afghan forces get along. It's just not going to happen. Why keep trying to make it act like a seven-day agreement is going to make any fucking difference at all? Just leave. Let's just leave Afghanistan.
The thing that makes me so sad is seeing, because we had these same talks last year, and then the Taliban attacked a U.S. military base last December, which put things on hold, and they're always doing this kind of stuff. And we know it. When they asked General Scott Miller, who commands the U.S. forces in Afghanistan, he was like, oh, it was kind of like a breach of understanding. It was just a miscommunication. It's not. It's just fucked. And we know that when we leave, because I think that's the way it's trending, we are going to leave, the Afghan police and the Afghan army are completely fucked. They are completely fucked. And then I just...
let me play devil's advocate. At what point do we throw up our hands and say, that's your problem?
I know, but I'm just saying it just sucks. It's just really unfortunate. And this is stuff that stresses me out, that I worry about in my free time because I'm a crazy person. But I know they're fucked. And then I just am thinking about the way Taliban rule was for the people before. I just feel so bad for the women of Afghanistan. I feel bad for the police and the army and the whatever, because I know that's what's going to happen. Because clearly, look at them. They're still being fucking dicks. It's not going to change. And it feels 20 years, and then it's going to go right back to exactly the way it was before, which is just, it's mind boddling, It's wild. Crazy sauce.
If not worse. You can make the argument that it'll be worse, because now they've gone through 20 years, and what are we going to do? Go back again? Probably not.
Right. So I don't know. I feel like they had 20 years to refine their skills and
they
buy their
shit
time.
The bet on that.
And now they have a big old list of people who have betrayed them, who are in the army and the police and whatever. And I don't know. I'm being a negative Nancy, but it just looks like, surprise, they're still assholes. Who knew?
Yeah, big surprise. And not only are they asshole, but they're also, for round number three, they're also contributors for the New York fucking Times.
What in the hell?
Yeah. Huh.
All right. So whenever I was growing up, I remember very clearly watching on Sunday afternoons, you'd watch the late game of the NFL, and then that would usually roll into 60 minutes. And whenever the game was winding down, usually it's the Broncos that are playing in that late game. It would be the 60-minute little ticker that would go off. And then occasionally there would be somebody that would pop up on the screen that even my 12-year-old, 13-year-old brain would be like, how in the world is this dude on 60 Minutes? And be like, we're going to have a sit-down with Mikhail Gorbachev. I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are you sitting down with Mikhail Gorbachev? We're going to have a sit-down with Saddam Hussein. Why are you doing this? How does that even come about? And I think that the idea of having these dictators, there is essentially two schools of thought about it, where you have to have their thoughts out there, too, of why they're doing what they're doing, and that you can have an educated populace of why what their side is. But at the same time, Fuck that. I don't want to see a leader of the Taliban in the New York Times writing an op-ed. Do you guys?
No, not at all. Yeah. Especially when you consider the New York Times is one of the main prevalent news publications in our country.
Yeah, and this is pretty much the number two guy, like the number two guy on the U.S. list, and he is super bad.
Yeah. Not a nice guy at all.
So let's walk through what Jeff Strogel from the Task and Purpose kind of said about it. Okay, you want to walk us through it?
Sirhuddin Haqqani is an infamous terrorist, a Taliban leader with the blood of Americans on his hands, and now, like we said, he's a contributor for the New York Times. The newspaper's opinion section recently ran an article penned by Haqqani with the headline, "What We, comma, the Taliban Want."
So this article, before Kate continues, this article came out, I believe it was Friday morning.
Yeah.
And whenever I first saw it, I was like, this is Duffel Bag or The Onion's best work. I mean, the idea that a Taliban leader would write this, and not only did they write it, but they didn't even really give a formal introduction. Context, Katie, I know, like, Kate, if you listen to the show, if we talk about an obscure reference, or not even really that obscure, she'll still want us to give context of what's going on so everybody that's listening has an idea. There's no chance that everybody who reads the opinion pieces on the New York Times has any idea who this dude is.
Right.
There's no way.
Well, the only way the New York Times introduced him was as the deputy leader of the Taliban. But what they didn't tell you is that the FBI has $5 million for info leading to his arrest. The U.S. State Department has a reward of up to $10 million to bring him to justice. And there's many, many reasons for that. He's in 2008. He was part of an attack on a hotel in Kabul that killed six people, including an American citizen. He's believed to have coordinated and participated in cross-border attacks against the U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan. He was involved, allegedly, in the planning of an assassination attempt against Afghan President Hamid Karzai in 2008. And just kidnappings of Americans. Oh, most notably, of a New York Times reporter. Kind of a big deal, and that was completely left out. All they said was that the deputy leader of the Taliban, and they let him go on to say what he wanted to say. Again, this guy, Haqqani, he has ties to al-Qaeda and Pakistan's intelligence service. He's Taliban's number two commander since 2015, and he's just a super shitty guy. And in his opinion article, he argues that the Taliban is tired of war. Very clearly, since just this week they were attacking, you know, they were doing shit again. But any final peace agreement with the United States must include the full withdrawal of all U.S. and foreign troops from Afghanistan. The Taliban and U.S. are set to sign an interim peace deal on the 29th, as we said before, that would allow the Taliban to begin negotiating a political settlement with the Afghan government. The Times is keenly aware of how dangerous the Taliban is. And after all, the group has kidnapped, like we said, several New York Times journalists over the last 20 years.
Can I make a point about that? I am a firm believer of not holding grudges. I don't think it's a good, healthy way to live your life. If you are very mad at someone, that's just not a good way to go. But in this case, I'd make an exception. The New York Times, like, they've kidnapped a ton of your journalists over the years. Maybe don't give this guy the time of day. Maybe it's okay to hold a grudge in this case.
Well, their counter argument would be that the mission at the New York Times opinion is to tackle big ideas from a range of newsworthy viewpoints. And indeed, the you know, top guy is newsworthy, that's for damn sure, but I don't know if his opinion is worth hearing.
But how does
that,
I don't even know how something like that even comes about. Like, what do you do
to get here?
Like, do you connect on LinkedIn? Like, do you follow each other on Twitter and start DMing back and forth and like, hey, thinking about have you as a contributor? Oh, what's your normal pay? Oh, we usually do about $1,000 for 1,500 words. Where are you going to chop it down? Are you going to edit it some? I don't know, Haqqani. I'm not sure if we're going to do that or not. Like, how do you get to the spot where this dude is in the major United States publication? It's crazy to me.
Why in the world would we trust anything this motherfucker says? So he's arguing.
Yeah, so even like to get his opinion, who's to say that anything he said is you know, something that we could trust?
Because he argues that the Taliban have no interest in letting al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups use Afghanistan as its headquarters. He says it's not in the interest of any Afghan to allow such groups to hijack our country and turn it into a battleground, as the Taliban did themselves, has done themselves before. We've already suffered enough through foreign interventions. We will take all measures in partnership with other Afghans to make sure the new Afghanistan is a bastion of stability and that no one feels threatened on our soil. Again, they did bring stability.
Except for the women and children
and
shit like
that. They did bring stability before, but it was through fear, murder, terrorism, torture, all sorts of horrible fucking human rights violations that are just beyond. I mean, cutting women's tits off for small infractions, like all sorts of crazy. Sorry, but it's like just horrible.
It's like legit. Yeah, it's like legitimate torture stuff. Like these people, it's like we've gotten so used to hearing about the Taliban and things like that because we've been at war for so long. It's important to remember that the Taliban in and of itself, without harboring terrorists or anything like that, without being one of the key leaders that you are you allowed 9/11 type of stuff to really formulate and fester, without that, even without that, the Taliban people are fucking atrocious as far as being human beings go. These people are disgusting, and having them write and say like, oh, we don't want any more type of shit going on our soil, fuck you.
Yeah. And again, there's no way that they can guarantee, because the big issue before when Russia left was that it created a huge power vacuum. And that's what tore, you know, every mountain around Kabul had a different group trying to take over the city. And that led to a huge war that the Taliban versus this group. And there's no, they can't guarantee that won't happen again. There's no, as soon as we're out across the nation, the people are going to be trying to fill that void right away. And I just, I don't know, the whole thing just, I know this is.
And I think. And I think people who don't follow a lot of foreign policy, like kind of like the names sound familiar, that it's hard to keep track of who's what. This guy is right underneath as far as rewards by the FBI and CIA for killing him is right underneath Zahawi and the leader of Al-Qaeda. He's right underneath it. So it's him and then it's this dude.
I think like as round number two and this round as well, like, I just see that we're definitely finally really are approaching some sort of end. And I just hate knowing that the end does involve the Taliban having like a huge part of control again. And just,
I think there's a certain level of risk that we just have to accept, though. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just going to be banging our head against the wall for the next 20 years. Something,
I just feel bad for
something
the
drastically
people.
Has to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to round four. I don't know if it was the same thing for you guys, but whenever I was on deployment, we were constantly updating like our deployment videos. Whenever my buddies would come back from different deployments, I would watch their videos. We would watch them all together. Did you guys have those same experiences whenever you were in?
No.
Nope.
I never. You really didn't?
No, never. I swear to God. No unit I served with, we didn't have deployment videos. That I'm aware
really?
Of.
I mean, I'm sure, like, I was attached to 2-9 and 3-6. I'm sure they had them, but I didn't because I was just an attachment.
I'm thinking maybe at the ball when we got back, maybe there was a highlight video with, like, pictures. I don't know. I just don't remember it being a prevalent thing in my unit.
Oh, well, maybe I'm just the weirdo. I definitely remember, like, all my buddies, like, they would come back with theirs, and I would watch them, like, get some popcorn and grin and do everything. And part of it was going through, because I remember I had the little Microsoft Zune that was brown, that had the green outside, and I loaded up with different types of music. And I would remember, there was an option on the Microsoft Zune where you could push the button over and star it and remember it. If I came across a song, like, on the hard drive or wherever, that I could... No, this would be a good deployment song. Oh, I was flagging that bad boy because I wanted to keep it. This song that I want to play kind of is the embodiment of what it is, because a deployment song can either go one of two ways. You're either going to have a song that's kind of like a perfect circle bodies. Like there's this, they had a like bodies of the war drums.
Oh, yeah.
That's the sound of the body.
And Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, too, was another. That used to be the ZBT song. But there's a whole genre of YouTube videos. It's like the drone bombing videos and like the whatever infantry kicking doors down videos. But they all have, you're right, the same sort of songs.
So you either have that one or Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson.
Oh, like yeah.
You have these ones that are super intense. Or you could have ones that pull at the heartstring, like a Three Doors Down. Love me when I'm here. Love me when I'm gone. And then you can also have like the Toby Keith with your Bud Light Limes and your Screaming Eagles and shit like that. I came across this song that I had never heard of. I don't know if you've guys heard of it. So I want to do a first listen with the ZBT listeners.
Ooh.
Bryn, let's go ahead and give it a little bit of a play. Here, what's the song called? The song is called Mr. Red, White, and Blue. Okay.
Kate's going to have a negative take. She has a bad take. I can feel it.
It hurt to listen to.
What?
Come on.
Can I tell you why?
Why? Because you're a hipster and you think all music stinks?
No, because when I was in, the first couple years I was in, I was new boot goofing so hard That song would have given me just a red, white, and boner listening to it. I would have been like, this is my life. This is what I do. I am Mr. Red, White, and Blue. You know, I would have really, you know, I did leave my baby home with my
wife. I this song, because it only has, it's been out for 6 years now.
Oh, really?
3 million views of it on YouTube, which is quite a bit. 3 million views is a lot of views on YouTube. So whenever you have this song, imagine coming home. You're done with MCT, cons, you're done with your original like engineering school, and now you're about to go to your first real duty station. But before you do that, you have 14 days of leave. It's summertime. You're with your either high school buddies or friends from back home. Yep. You're at the cousins retreat for UK with all your cousins down the shore. And everybody's had like six, I would say everybody's had 4 to 5 beers already. Then they hand you the ox chord.
That song.
And they say, you have whatever. I
was listening to that chorus, and I immediately had a picture of Chaps in an Affliction t-shirt, backwards hat, plaid cargo shorts.
Jesus sandals.
Jesus sandals, arm in arm with his buddy. One solitary tear streaming down his face.
Oh, yeah.
And he just says to his buddy, this is what it's all about, man.
That's the kind of song that,
while I'm lotioning up the USMC tattoo on my tricep.
That's the kind of song somebody would have sent, somebody from my dad's church group would have sent him in an email when I was deployed. You know, like, hey, Joe, check this out. I thought it really means something to you guys with your daughter being, you know. I feel
and
like
I could see your dad video himself just like ripping a salute the entire time and forwarding that email.
Well, then he would forward it to me, right? He would forward it to me and be like, I just was really moved by this.
This song has Facebook written all over it.
He covered this is what you got to do in a song. He covered the people back home. He covered Sacrifice. In the second one, he did a classic patriotic song thing. He listed different states.
Yes.
You got to. Oh, yeah. California, Indiana, man. Of course, that's middle America.
Where real Americans come
he
from.
He had a little purple heart goofing reference
which
in
I
there.
Appreciated.
Purple heart beating. I mean, it just really, he covered the whole gamut.
And if you have a chance to actually watch the video, he's in a barn. What's more American than a barn?
And not only that, but he also has people in full combat battle rattle running down a road for some reason.
Yeah, Bren, you were not in the military, though you are now producer first class.
Pretty much.
You hear a song like this, what do you think?
To me, it sounds like a song that would be in the back of a TikTok that was filmed on a calculator, and it's like in slow motion, and the boot's just like turning around. He's like not even wearing like real like
perfect
army gear or anything.
Dude,
like
TikTok song.
He's wearing like airsoft uniform kind of.
Yes.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Perfect description.
Oh, man.
My goodness.
Overall, let's get our thoughts on the song overall. Are we feeling good about it? Is it something that we can keep in our deployment repertoire on our Microsoft Zoom? Are we saying, yes, this is a song for me?
For sure. And I would like to also say, I'm going to come up with our own version of that song.
Wow.
We have the resources here. We have camera guys, green screen, all that stuff. I'm going to write an unironic song along those lines. We have musicians here.
We have a band who can perform
it. And I'm going to see. I'm going to make it as sappy and patriotic as I possibly can.
Oh, I love
and
this.
And I'm going to see how many views we can get on YouTube.
I love this idea.
It's not going to have joke lyrics. It's going to be like deadly serious. And I'm going to see how well we can do.
Can I help write it?
For sure. We'll do it. Bye. Okay. Give me a couple weeks. Like, we'll get the lyrics together. Then we'll do a music video. And we'll do
the
whole
thing.
Oh, you
know what? We are going to D.C. in a couple weeks. Maybe we can perform it on the steps of the Capitol.
Perhaps we could. You play guitar. Cons, I bet you do a mean tambourine.
Mm.
I've seen you at karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to do one.
All right.
We're
going to
see
if we can
beat this guy. Mr. Red, White, and Blue, watch out. We're coming for your neck.
And if you have any recommendations that are a better song for a deployment video than Mr. Red, White, and Blue, we want to hear it because we need inspiration. We need to be experts in this category as well. So make sure you let us know what's going on with that.
Can I say one more thing? That song sounds like, do you ever see now they create these bots? That like there was just one where a bot created a song by Tyga or whatever.
Yes.
No, Travis Scott.
Travis Scott. So like I can see that song being, we created this patriotic song with a patriot bot. Like, you know what I mean? It just had
checks
everything.
Checks all the boxes.
Right, exactly. So I'm going to Patriot Bot a song, and it'll be coming out hot. I'm going to do it.
All right.
hopefully whenever Kate does her version of that song or whatever song we're going to make, the YouTube comments will even come close to what's going on Mr. Red, White, and Blue, because these are some of my favorites. Because the people who are watching these, I just imagine that they're all like rip shit and absolutely wasted whenever they're commenting on this. Yeah. That they've had several glasses of whiskey. They're in their feels big time. Like Michael Buchanan commented on their YouTube page. He said, 20 years in the Navy, 14-year rescue squad and fire department, wrecked and rolled over a fire truck. I was in a coma for 7 weeks, starting slow, but steady running country boy. Mm. That's all the comment says. Nothing about the song at all. The next one's from Lindsay. She said, hi, when I'm 18 years old, I'm going to go in the Army. God bless my soul. And I'm 12 now. I'm doing this for my older brother. He's 18, but he cannot be a Marine. So when I am 18, I'm going in the Army for him.
That's a sweet sentiment.
He's going to love that. That's nice. He's going to love that.
That is good. One of my favorite ones, too, is whenever people just go in there. Kathleen McDonald just said, U.S. Army, 1978 to 1981. Love that one.
I like Andre. He says, damn, I'm not even American, but this song made me shiver. Wow. That's intense.
I also like Steven down at the bottom. Steven says, hey man, I'm a Lance Corporal in the United States Marine Corps. Love this song, and I hope to hear more patriotic music from you. You're a great artist, and if I ever die in combat, I know it won't be in vain. Keep what you do, doing what you do. Semper Fi.
This Seelox let him with, of course, a skull. His little avatar is a skull. For those who've been downrange, to us, to those like us, damn few. I'm just picturing
159 upvotes on that one. So hopefully we can match the heat on that. And if you need a little motivation, more motivation than that last song, you're going to enjoy round number 5 because it comes to us from a 62-year-old hard charger. Let's hop into round 5. All right, round number 5, we're going to get into a little bit of plank goofing. And because we're going to do that, our resident hardo, Captain Cons, is going to get into the plank position for what he says is going to be the entire round. Kate, do you think he could do this, first of all?
The only reason I think he can is because he's one of the most annoyingly competitive people I have ever met. So he's about to do a whole round. He's getting into position.
All right, we're in planking.
He's in planking position. And we're going to do this next round.
Start talking. Come on.
Position. All right, so we're in planking position. He's on the wooden table, which can't be comfortable as well. So we'll get into this now. You can see him clearly. Hopefully it doesn't mess up the audio. We'll post this on our YouTube page, or you can check out at ZeroBlog30 on YouTube. Like, just go there, check it out, subscribe, review, do all that kind of stuff. This story comes to us from CNN. It says that it's an incredible feat at any age, but George Hood, who set the male record for the longest time in an abdominal plank position, is 62, and he says he's in the greatest shape of his life. On February 15th, Hood held a plank for 8 hours, 15 minutes, and 15 seconds.
That seems especially long when I consider that the table's already shaking from Khan struggling after only 1 minute. My goodness.
Yeah.
Sorry.
8 hours and 15 minutes and 15 seconds is a long time. The female record is currently held by Dana Glockwaka from Canada. I think she's actually from Saskatoon, right?
Yeah. Oh, big time Saskatoon. Glockwaka. Yeah.
She held the plank for 4 hours, 19 minutes, and 55 seconds last year. But Hood is a former U.S. Marine and retired DEA supervisory agent, and he has broken the record for the longest plank before, and he did this in 2001 when he held it for just 1 hour and 20 minutes. And when he tried to set it again in 2016, he lost the record for somebody from China who held it for 8 hours, 1 minute, and 1 second. Hood from Illinois said that he was determined to reclaim his title. He trained every single day for an average of 7 hours for the 18 months leading up to the big
day. Imagine being this guy's wife. Honey, what are we doing this weekend?
Can't. Got a plank.
Gonna be in the garage planking. Sorry.
This is incredibly boring.
Keep that ass up. Time.
Yeah, buddy. He's bridging. That's all right.
Yeah, that was technically a plank break because he put his ass up into the air and broke the plank position.
Okay.
Now he's in the front-leaning rest
Full
position.
Plank mode. Okay.
Khan's in the front-leaning rest position. But Hood said that he would train 4 to 5 hours a day in the plank position hold, and then he would do 700 push-ups, 2,000 sit-ups and sets of 100, and he would do 500 leg squats a day for upper body and arms, and he would do approximately 300 curls a day. In total, Hood said that he did around 2,100 hours of planking to prepare him for the event, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. And if you look at a picture of the guy, his traps are popping. They look really, really good. For 62 years old, he looks fantastic.
You know what's popping over here? The bolts on this table.
Yeah, they I'm going to break it.
They are really struggling. The table is shaking like a leaf. It is. It's looking a little rough over here. His face is the color of a cherry tomato.
Is this round over yet?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, no, we're not done. We're still... Oh. All right.
You can get down.
He did it. He did it for however long that was. How long do you think you could go if your life depended on it? He's sweating. The man is soaked in sweat.
Well, it's warm. He was probably sweating before he was.
True, he is a sweaty guy.
I'm a sweater, and it's warm in the studio.
True. I'm proud of you. I feel very proud of
you. You know what?
He did it.
I'll say, I'm just, like you said, I'm competitive. You and I had a plank off one time, and I just said, like, well, I'll just go as long as I have to beat Kate.
Yeah, and he did. He did. But I let him because I felt bad for him. Anyways, better you than me, I always say. But that's insane.
That kind of thing, it's those type of exercise, which I'm sure he loves. Like, he's on CNN. Like, a bunch of different websites have talked about him and things like that. So I'm sure at 62 years old, being like a Marine and a DEA guy, he's probably has that hard-o mentality as well. But that kind of thing, I just can never imagine myself being like, I'm going to devote 4 to 5 hours a day for the next 18 months to planking.
To me,
that's what I'm going to do.
All comes down to mental toughness. I think it's way more mental than it is. I mean, it's impressive physical at this amount of time. But doing 4 to 5 hours a day in the plank pose for like 7 months, I mean, did he have a little TV in front of him?
Yeah, what
during
did he do
this
to pass that time?
Well, I think I would need something to distract me mentally, because if it was just me doing it with my own thoughts, forget it. So, yeah, that's crazy.
And you couldn't even read because you'd get so bored. Like, you'd fall asleep. If I read for a long period of time, you get sleepy. Like, what is – even if he has one of those things that's like an eye tracer, what do you do? I have no idea. That seems like a pointless record to have, but congratulations to this Marine for having it. We're very proud of you.
Semper
Actually,
Plank.
Do you want to give him a ZBT Achievement Medal?
Wow.
Oh,
yes, I think so. I think this warrants a ZBT Achievement Medal.
All right, so for meritorious action while conducting over 8 hours planking and training for over 18 months, I hereby give you, former Marine Hood, Gregory Hood, the ZBT Achievement Medal. It's the first of its kind, so wear it proudly, sir. The first ZBT medal goes to Gregory Hood. Congratulations to Mr. Hood.
Woo!
You have done your family proud and are in keeping with the United States Naval traditions and all Marine Corps traditions as well. Congratulations. They're given under my hand this, 24th day.
September. September.
Wow. My goodness.
September, yeah. All right, let's move on to safe rounds and alibis. We'll start with you, Bren. What do we got?
RIP to a long, long time stoolie, Mad Mike Hughes. Launched himself on a rocket, crash landed.
Right.
He's with Doris now.
Flat earther, trying to prove the earth was flat.
Yeah, Fordham grad, right?
Was he really?
I think so, right?
Oh my God, don't start rumors like that. But yeah, no, RIP. But you know what? He went out doing what he loves, trying to prove the earth is flat. So
I'm surprised that those videos made a little comeback too, like that they are all over the place, because it was him going off in his rocket and then you just hear people going, oh God.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As soon as it went off, it went really bad and people just started going, oh God. It's like, why is that video on the internet? Why would you do that?
Like the one video that I saw where there's like a guy, he's behind a camera set up on a tripod and he's filming it, and then it like crash lands like 200 yards away and he just like puts his head down because he just knows that he's just like, this guy just splattered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Tough.
Cons, what about you?
Yeah, real quick, shout out Army men's and women's basketball beat Navy over the weekend. So proud of them. Congratulations.
Yeah, for mine, sad news again coming out of the Naval Academy. They have lost yet another midshipman. His name was David Forney. So keep his family and friends and teammates. He was on the football team there in your thoughts and prayers. I believe, is the third midshipman they've lost this year. Mm-hmm. And I just... your heart just breaks you. It just, you know, anytime a young person passes, knowing that the close bonds that they have there, and I'm assuming that morale, a lot of broken hearts at the Naval Academy right now. So I'm just thinking of them, keeping them in my thoughts and sending love their way. And that's my saved round.
I have nothing at all, so we will sound the retreat.